Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, has the Force been with you lately? If not, when did it leave you and how? It might be harder for it to leave you than for you to be experiencing it. So we're going to talk to an author who knows a lot about this Force, what it stands for, how to better feel connected to it, and so much more, because he's written an amazing book that I just loved every page of, called Quantum Spirituality. And the subtitle is Science, Gnostic Mysticism, and Connecting with Source Consciousness. Peter Canova, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Yeah, hi, Peter. Good to be back again. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here, because I want the audience to really understand the values that you bring to us in this book of bridging ancient times to modern times, of knowing the source. and you'll explain what the source means, of course. But it started with the discovery of the Gnostic writings and how much they knew about modern science. So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, the source is pretty much self-explanatory. There is only one consciousness. There is only one force in creation, and everything else is just appearances of that one force, different forms or appearances of that one force. So the book is really about connecting with that higher or source consciousness. But it's kind of like a roadmap. Quantum spirituality is quantum physics and ancient spirituality. And like any roadmap, you want to have at least a couple of coordinates, north and south, latitude and longitude. And the coordinates that I used were science and ancient mysticism. And I specifically zeroed in on the Gnostics because out of all the ancient traditions, I found them to be the most scientifically precise in terms that we can directly relate to major theories of quantum physics today. And it's not a coincidence. I'm not going to go, we only have a half an hour, so I'm not going to go on the whole story of how I was led to this, but it's not a coincidence that I stumbled onto quantum physics after I studied ancient spiritual texts, because spirituality and quantum physics essentially deal with three of the same things, which is light, energy, and matter. And they describe these things. These are the forces of creation. These are the forces through which creation manifests and operates. And they describe them obviously in somewhat different terms, because back 2,000-3,000 years ago, during the times of the Gnostics, they didn't have particle colliders and technical jargon, technical language. So they, you know, would describe it in the references of their day, which largely were mythic. They would seem mythical and so forth and so on. So but the Gnostics essentially described this one force, and they said how this force literally spread itself out through creation. So I want the audience to understand the difference between creation and something called emanation. This is an important concept. Creation, which is pretty much what we were taught in the Judeo-Christian tradition, pictures a god, usually a male figure sitting on a throne with a gray beard, and you know, he essentially waved his hand and created human beings out of the dust of the earth and so forth. So a creation is something that is separate from its creator. So, you know, look at Pinocchio and Geppetto. Geppetto was the creator, Pinocchio was the creation, and that's pretty much how the Judeo-Christian tradition taught us that creation came about. But the Gnostics said, no, that's not the way it really happened. The one source emanated or projected its own essence out, so that the creations, the other points of consciousness, of which we are part of as consciousness in material form, these other points of consciousness were not separate from their creator. They were actually projections of the essence of the creative force itself. The difference being that they were created at lower levels of vibration or frequency. So you see, this limitation was a very necessary thing, because in order to experience individuality, you have to have limited consciousness, because if you didn't, if you had the same consciousness of the source, you'd be absorbed right back into the source. You wouldn't have a sense of yourself as an individual being. So you could say in some ways that limitation is the price that we pay for individuality. But I think the main concept to get here, Peter, is that this one source literally encompasses everything that exists. It is energy, it is spirit, it is matter, it is all these things, because there is nothing else other than that source energy.
But you also help us understand the relative nature of how we fit in to the larger picture, mm-hmm. as in, you know, as the energy comes down to us in individuation, we have to appreciate that and work from that back to the main source, from expanding our own sense of self and expanding our consciousness as much as we can into, you know, meditation and experiences of oneness ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, the best analogy that I've come up with to describe how it works is an electrical power grid. The source operates at a tremendous power, and it has to be stepped down to go through the relay stations to be usable. And we are the relay stations, in effect. Okay. And it's this energy is stepped down, but it still manifests through us. So we are part of the creative force itself. We all participated in some measure in the creation, and especially what the condition that we find ourselves in, which is the appearance of a physical body, of spirit in a physical body. But like I say, we're stepped down energy, because that raw energy of the source is so tremendous that, you know, in order to experience creation in different forms, it had to sort of lower its frequency and spread itself out.
And you talk about Sophia in this, and it's another way that it steps down. There's an angle to this that brings the divine feminine into this.
Yeah. Well, Sophia, for those who are unfamiliar with the name Sophia or who Sophia was a very prominent figure in ancient mysticism, but she was also a major figure in the Bible. Now, the reason we don't recognize that is that we get English translations of the Bible, and Sophia means wisdom in Greek. So we see descriptions of wisdom throughout, particularly the Old Testament, in the book of Proverbs, the book of Job. And wisdom says of herself, I was there from the beginning. I am co-eternal with the Father, which means that she was an aspect. She was a feminine aspect of the deity, of the force itself. So in the Gnostic text, Sophia plays a very specific role. And Sophia was actually the first of the spirit consciousness to break from the unity of heaven to gain individual experience. So you can sort of think of the original source and the first spirit consciousness or spiritual beings that were projected by the source as operating in a kind of harmony, like planets revolving around the sun, in effect. They were working in harmony with the will of the one. But Sophia, being wisdom, and how does wisdom grow? Wisdom has to grow through experience, right? So Sophia wanted to experience something other than this sort of hive mentality, I guess I can call it, in a way. And she decided to embark on a journey to have individual experience. So,
which is why she bit the apple.
Yeah, that's kind of an analogous story, in the Christian sense of the word. But you're right. You're correct. It's the same principle. Right. And Sophia looks outside of this harmony. And she sees chaos out there. Chaos essentially was that unformed potential untouched by the mind of God or untouched by the mind of the source. It was the air, it was the place where things could happen, the random chance, the things that were free to sort of, you know, just happen that weren't organized by that source mind. So Sophia says, well, that's a good place to maybe get experience. So she projects her essence into chaos. Now, chaos, incidentally, is a term in quantum physics. It's called chaos theory. And we learned in quantum physics, there is no such thing as a vacuum. Anything that appears in empty space, there's a zero point energy. It's seething with unseen virtual particles, particles that have not yet come into existence as matter. Okay, it's matter in potential, let's say. Very interesting, because that definition of virtual particles was described by the Gnostics as proto-matter, meaning that which comes before matter. It's about as clear as you can get in describing virtual particles in a zero-point vacuum of chaos. So Sophia projects herself into chaos. And lo and behold, something very unique happens. She gets engulfed by these virtual particles, by this proto-matter. They swarm around her like iron filings would swarm to a magnet, and they engulf her. And they are activated by her high energy, and they start to siphon off her energy, and she begins to morph into something else. This merger of Sophia's energy and this virtual particles of this virtual matter starts to form something new. And Sophia cries out to heaven, "Save me. I am becoming as lead. I am becoming as matter. Save me from this." She's losing her energy, and she realizes that she's morphing into something else. So that whole episode really is what the God particle is about. Now, many of your listeners may have heard about the God particle. I know it's been in popular books, and there was a lot of hoopla about it a number of years back when they first verified the existence of the God particle.
The Higgs boson.
And so what happens is, in our universe, we're surrounded by a field called the Higgs field. And inside the Higgs field are these particles, like virtual particles, and they're called Higgs bosons. And when energy enters into our universe, and incidentally, scientists don't know what energy is. I mean, they can manipulate.
Well, you just froze.
Yeah, so energy comes into this universe, and it hits the Higgs field. And these Higgs bosons swarm onto that energy and slow it down, slow its frequency, until it starts to take on the properties of matter. This is an exact description of what happened to Sophia and the proto-matter. It's a complete description of the God particle in mythic terms. So what happens is, when this new matter, as a result of the merger of Sophia and the proto-matter in chaos, happens, this new matter is something completely different from the spiritual realm. And they can't coexist together. They're of a different frequency and a different vibration. So the Gnostic texts say that this new dimension of matter is expelled in a great upheaval and projected apart in a great blow up or upheaval. Now, what is that describing? The Big Bang, right? So that's exactly what the Big Bang was. The Big Bang was the appearance of something from nothing, or apparent nothing. The transition from spiritual to a more denser, you know, material vibration. So right there, you know, we have a couple major theories of quantum physics being described, which is the God particle and the Big Bang. And also, I didn't really get much into it, but, you know, parallel dimensions were also described in the Gnostic text. But essentially, the story of Sophia is a very complete story of how creation came about.
You know, it's wonderful. Then the idea is to follow it through history and to understand this kind of the way that we've been shown to be limited people by the teachings about it. So the Gnostics their writings had to be hidden and only came out thousands of years later. And now all of a sudden, and also quantum physics came thousands of years later. And now they're joining up to show us that we have been separated from the wisdom, separated from the understanding of the larger picture, that that we have been separated out and are trying to be more included again. And the more we are, has to do with our consciousness level and using the force to apply to our lives.
Yeah, there's something very interesting in the suppression of the Gnostics, and it had to do with the rise of Christianity. And the Gnostics predated Christianity, but they became the first Christians because they saw Jesus basically teaching a Gnostic message. And we know in the Bible that Jesus was had a secret teaching, because it says right so in the Bible. It says unto the disciples he gave to the keys to the king, the keys to the kingdom of heaven, but unto the masses he taught in parables. And we have writings from the early church fathers like Clement of Alexandria and Origen, who are both ancient Christian bishops, confirming that Jesus had a secret teaching that was only given to a few. So you had really two branches of Christianity at the inception. You had the outer church, which became the Orthodox Catholic Church that we still know of today, and you have the Gnostics. And the Gnostics were a threat to the Orthodox Church, because essentially the Orthodox Church started with the hierarchies and the dogmas and the whole idea that in order to get to God, you got to come through us. We speak for God. And the Gnostics said, that's ridiculous. Every person is a projection of God, so we can speak with them directly. We don't really need the hierarchy. So obviously that became a threat, and the Orthodox Church suppressed the Gnostics rather violently. And it's very interesting that they discovered the hidden Gnostic text in a cave in Egypt in 1945, the same year that the atomic bomb, that we entered the nuclear age. And I think that that is not a coincidence, because right there you have the dark side and you have the light side of quantum physics. The dark side was the use of quantum knowledge to develop a destructive weapon, the bomb. The light side of it was the knowledge that the Gnostics brought about the methods and operation of creation, which could be used to bring us back to the source itself. So I think these two things, the birth of light and the birth of darkness, in a sense, in the quantum age, appeared simultaneously. And of course, you know, we've seen the movie Oppenheimer, many of us now, and that to me was sort of the dark side of the quantum age.
Right, and it was a dark movie.
Yeah.
But this is what's fascinating here is the opportunity that you're presenting. I mean, we can talk about the details of the science, and but what does it mean in terms of how we apply it to our lives and how we see ourselves in this greater light, and being able to seek the force, let's say, because we've been separated from it for so long.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me apologize for the lighting here. I could see part of me in shadow. I'm in a hotel room, and this is like, you know, kind of the best I can do. So
that's all right, because this is at first it's an audio, and then the video will be at my YouTube channel, Energy Stu at YouTube. But okay, the audio is what the audience will hear first.
Okay. Well, look, I think here's the importance of all this at the end of the day. I like it's how you want to lead your life and the quality of your life. So I always say to people, look, you got a couple of choices here. You can live in the basement, or you can move up to the penthouse. Now, when you move up to the penthouse, you get a much more comprehensive view of the whole panorama of life than when you're living down in the basement. So living in a state of limited consciousness is essentially living in the basement. You are more led around by circumstances, whereas when you're up in the penthouse, you more create circumstances. So I think that the payoff for people to be able to work their way back into the state of higher consciousness from which they derived, and we all have the capability of doing that. That's the importance right there. It's really, you know, how you want to live your life and the quality of life while you're here on Earth, while you're in a a material form. So my book, Quantum Spirituality, essentially the structure of the book is I give people a tremendous background of both spiritual and quantum knowledge, and show how things operate, how we came to perceive ourselves to be physical objects in a physical world, how that's really an illusion, how we can see through that illusion. And then towards the end of the book, I talk about how people can use certain principles to help them in their own meditative practice to, you know, get to the point, or to self sort of condition themselves in a way to have the best experiences they can with contacting this higher, our source energy, our source consciousness.
Right. And that's why I loved so many, all the pages of your book, because it's so comprehensive on so many levels. And I think of consciousness as something that the harder we work for, the more difficult it is to obtain, and the more that we can surrender to it and allow the greater powers of the force to work for us with just holding intention and getting out of our own way.
You know, I think that's an important point, Peter, and I completely agree with you. I think you set your intention, but you don't force it. You set your intention, and then you kind of let it go. And it's in the letting go that you usually have the experience, those, these experiences that we're talking about. You know, I remember we used to do spoon bending, okay? And if we concentrated too hard on bending the spoon, it wouldn't bend. But if we concentrated on it and set our intention to bend it, and then we were distracted by something that pulled our attention away from it, then all of a sudden the spoon would bend. You know, and I think it's the same thing, like you said, with contacting consciousness. Set your intention, and you can, you know, periodically revisit that intention. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, don't strain it. Don't force it. Don't, I have to have an experience. I have to have an experience. That won't
Right. We need to put it out there and invite these experiences to show up.
Yeah.
And then not think about it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's pretty much the way it seems to work.
Right. And then we're not taught that. So it's really important. Your book is, you know, really plugs in. It's kind of like reading the Bhagavad Gita. And all of a sudden, you're in the experience of it rather than the left brain cerebral nature of it.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this book is it appeals to both right brain and left brain people, because it has the science, it has the analytics, it has the, you know, the logic and the analysis in it. But by the same token, it's showing how that is just, you know, one path to the right brain side, the subjective intuitive side. So really, if you want to be a complete human being, you need to have both sides of your hemispheres working. You need to have the intuitive or feeling nature, which we often describe as the sacred feminine or the female qualities. And then the more analytical side, I kind of liken it to a rocket ship. A rocket has two basic components, the fuel and the guidance system. Okay. The fuel is that intuition and that feeling that, you know, that heartfelt feeling, there's something there and you want to launch yourself towards it. The guidance system helps guide you there. If you have the fuel, but not the guidance system, you might launch, but you go around in circles. If you have the guidance system without the fuel, you never get off the ground.
Right. And so we have to believe that we have the fuel, and not, I don't think we can worry so much about the guidance other than it be heartfelt.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. I think people get to the point, many people get to the point in life where it's kind of just beating them down to a pulp. And fear is probably the curse of humanity. It's one of the most, you know, basic but retarding forces that human beings can, you know, experience. And I think everybody faces that dark night of the soul, goes through those times. You know, some people will turn to things like fundamentalist Christianity or fundamentalist Islam or whatever the case may be. I think other people who may take a more fortunate path, get to the point where that they can channel that desire into something that is more of a spiritual experience. And the difference between them is that religion, if you're on a spiritual journey and you're on a path and you come across these way stations, religion will say, come on in and become a member here, and we'll teach you the truth, as if they have the truth, as if they have a monopoly of the truth, and you're trapped in that box. But the spiritual journey, you go into that way station and you take what you can from it. You say thank you and you move on to the next place. So spirituality is an open-ended experience, whereas religion tends to become a closed-end experience.
Right. And yet I think a lot of our audience are more on the spiritual bent than the religious bent. And so I think this has really been important, talking with you, because, you know, what it is that it's the spark that, you know, you're creating a spark. You're giving people ideas, but at the same time, you're creating realizations that people go aha about, and then they can follow through on how that guides them individually.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing the book could really accomplish for people, I think most people already have some of the bits and pieces, you know, in their minds or in their souls. What this book helps you do is connect the dots. So all those things that maybe sort of, you know, in your subconscious, it brings them out to the fore and say, oh, you know, I've had that experience, or oh, that makes sense to me, you know. And I think the most people that I talk to that read the book have that light bulb moment, that aha moment, that wow, I mean, you know, instead of operating off of that single dimension, they now have a bunch of reference points. They now have an arena between the science and between the spiritual knowledge that's in the book. They now have an arena and a context, and so many things start to fall together for them.
Right. And that's how we were saying life works, is that, you know, we create the context from our intention and allow the content to appear magically in our lives as we take each step forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a, you know, it's a great journey. Once you make this contact with higher source of information, a higher source of consciousness, it opens your eyes. It's like you had a film in front of your eyes all these years, and it opens your eyes, because when you have direct knowledge of something, that is real knowledge. So you can get knowledge from reading books, but that's sort of secondhand knowledge, and it kind of blends into faith. You know, you might take on faith what you read. But you know, I liken it to like a fire. If you didn't know what fire was, and I told you the fire burns, well, you would have to take that, you know, secondhand. You'd have to take that on faith. But if you stick your hand in the fire, then you own it. Then you know right. The fire burns. And that's direct knowledge. So, you know, you want to put your hand in that fire and have that direct contact with higher consciousness. And then, like the things that you and I are talking about, that both of us have probably experienced personally in our lives, it takes on a whole new meaning of people just listening to us and say, oh yeah, you know, that sounds good. You know, it takes on a whole new meaning, because you know that there's a whole nother existence, a whole other dimensions of multiverse of existence out there. And it's not a theory to you anymore. It's a fact, because you've been there, you've experienced it.
Right, and the idea is to invite it. So yeah. Peter Canova, we're running out of time. I really appreciate talking with you about your book, Quantum Spirituality. How can people follow up?
Yeah, I think the best way is go to my website, petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. You'll find a portal there to my own podcast, which is also called Quantum Spirituality. And you'll find information about the book and also about a trilogy I wrote called The First Souls Trilogy, which is a 25-time award-winning fictional trilogy, a thriller about the first spirit consciousness to incarnate into materiality. And they reoccur over different critical epochs of human history. And it's one of the most highly awarded book series around. In fact, it did win Best Book Series in one of the awards. So all of that information and videos and a lot of other great stuff is available from my website.
Wonderful. Peter Canova, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Good to be with you.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening.